The only consolatory news of the interior came from the banks of the Seine. The people of Lyon had made a firm stand against the troops, which the Austrian general Bubna had advanced to the very barriers of the city. Our troops in Dauphiné had thus time to come up to the assistance of Lyon, and the Austrian army fell back on Brest. After allowing our troops to rest during the 3rd, 4th, 5th of February, Napoleon determined on evacuating Troyes. The walls of the old capital, Champagne, and the numerous channels into which the Seine there divides its course presented indeed great advantages for opposing the enemy. But the Allies might turn the position and advance in all directions upon Paris. Time was too precious to be lost in defensive operations, and an obstinate resistance on this point could be attended with no result but the burning and destruction of Troyes, which is built entirely of wood. Besides, the troops from the Pyrenees were advancing. The 1st Division, commanded by General Laval, was expected to be at Privas on the 8th. By continuing to retreat in the direction of Paris, the army was therefore at the same time approaching an important reinforcement. Up to the last moment, our troops made so bold a stand before Troyes that the enemy thought it necessary to prepare for a second battle. Liechtenstein's corps, which on the 3rd had advanced as far as the Bridge of Clery, had been beaten by the Duke de Treviso. On the 4th of February, Generals Colloredo, Nostis, and Bianchi had been repulsed in an attack which they had risked upon the bridges of the Bars, in which engagement General Colloredo was wounded. Finally, on the 5th of February, Napoleon, having made a demonstration beyond the Bars for the purpose of misleading the enemy with respect to the retreat which we proposed to make on the following day, the Allies were led to believe that the whole French army was debouching to resume the offensive. They immediately fell back a march, and their headquarters, which on the 4th were established at Lusigny near Vendôme, were on the evening of the 5th removed to Bar-sur-Aube. The vigor thus evinced in mere advanced post operations was remarkable after a lost battle. Those who estimated the enemy's trophies at Brienne to have been 4,000 prisoners and 69 pieces of artillery, and who have affirmed that 20,000 men deserted from the French army in the retreat, seemed to forget that the more they exaggerated our losses, the more they augmented the glory of the commanders who contended so energetically against such adverse circumstances. On the 6th, the army quitted Troyes and took the road to Paris. After its departure, the municipal authorities kept their gates closed only until they obtained from the enemy the guarantees of a capitulation. Napoleon that night slept at the village of Gray, halfway between Troyes and Nogent. The evacuation of Troyes and our prolonged retreat had dispelled the last hopes of the army. The troops were dispirited to an indescribable degree. "Where shall we halt?" was the question that was repeated from mouth to mouth. On the 7th, we arrived at Nogent. The houses commanding the open country were fortified, and preparations were made for blowing up the bridge in case of necessity. In a few hours, Nogent was secured against all danger of a coup de main. For the sake of greater expedition, Napoleon paid in advance the sums necessary for the completion of the works. In this position, we halted to dispute the passage of the Seine with Prince Schwarzenberg. The couriers who arrived at Nogent continued to bring us some favorable news. On the north, the enemy had occupied Aix-la-Chapelle and Liège immediately after the departure of the Duke de Tarento. The Anglo-Prussian army was blockading Antwerp, but General Carnot arrived in time to take the command of the city, which he entered on the 2nd of February. Just as the gates were about to be closed against the enemy, General Bulow, after vainly attempting an attack on Antwerp, left before the place a corps of observation composed of English and Saxon troops. And with his Russian and Prussian forces, he advanced on Flanders. On the 2nd, his advance guard entered Brussels. Belgium was lost. General Maison had effected his retreat on our old frontier. Letters from Paris and aides de camp of the Duke of Toronto announced still more urgent danger, namely the march of Marshal Blucher, who was advancing on the capital by the Great Road of Chalon. Immediately after the Battle of Brienne, Blucher had separated from the Austrian army and had rallied between Arcis-sur-Aube and Chalon, the different divisions of his army from which he had been momentarily cut off by our march upon Saint-Dizier. With his collected forces, he now determined on descending the Marne. While the Austrians descended the Seine, General York entered Chalon on the 5th of February. The Duke of Toronto had established himself there on his arrival from Liège. But pursued by the Prussian army, the marshal could make but a feeble resistance. He was returning in the direction of Epernay without knowing where he should be able to halt. And he now wrote for orders and reinforcements. Thus, the enemy was master Chalon and perhaps of Epernay. This news served only to increase the dejection which pervaded all minds. Even Napoleon appears to lose spirit. At this moment, he received from Châtillon the conditions which the Allies wished to dictate to him. They showed but too plainly the influence of the events at Brienne. We were now told the Allies' descent from the bases proposed at Frankfurt to obtain peace, France must retire within her old limits. Napoleon, having read the dispatches, shut himself up in his chamber and observed the most melancholy silence. The Prince of Neuchâtel and the Duke de Bassano went to him. He presented to them the paper which he had just received from Châtillon. They read it, and another interval of silence ensued. But it was necessary that an answer should be sent off to the Duke de Vicenza. The Allies demanded a categorical, prompt reply. The courier was waiting, but Napoleon still persisted in maintaining silence. The Prince of Neuchâtel and the Duke de Bassano joined in entreaty. With painful emotion, they hinted at the necessity of yielding. Napoleon was at length forced to explain himself. "How," he exclaimed with warmth, "can you wish me to sign this treaty and thereby violate my solemn oath? Unexampled misfortunes have torn from me the promise of renouncing the conquests that I have myself made, but shall I relinquish those that were made before me? Shall I violate the trust that was so confidently reposed in me? After the blood that has been shed and the victories that have been gained, shall I leave France less than I found her? Never! Can I do so without deserving to be branded as a traitor and a coward? You are alarmed at the continuation of the war, but I'm fearful of more certain dangers which you do not see. If we renounce the boundary of the Rhine, France not only recedes, but Austria and Prussia advance. France stands in need of peace, but the peace which the Allies wish to impose on her would expose her to greater misery than the most sanguinary war. What would the French people think of me were I to sign their humiliation? What could I say to the Republicans of the Senate when they demand their barriers of the Rhine? Heaven preserve me from such degradation. Dispatch an answer to Caulaincourt, if you will, but tell him that I reject the treaty. I would rather incur the dangers of the most terrible war." Having thus given vent to his feelings, Napoleon threw himself in his camp bed. The Duke de Bassano, who remained with him, spent the rest of the night beside his couch, and profiting by a first moment of subsiding passion, he obtained permission to write to the Duke de Vicenza in such terms as authorized him to continue the negotiation. Napoleon gave orders that the enemy's conditions should be transmitted to Paris, that the members of the Privy Council should assemble to consider them, that each should state his opinion together with the grounds on which it had been formed, and that correct minutes of all opinions should be kept.